Okay, welcome back to the podcast. Today we have Anthony Slater of the Ocali on to talk a little Oklahoma State basketball. Travis Ford, LeBrian Nash, and the four remaining regular season games that Oklahoma State has left. Thanks, as always, for joining us, and you can check everything out at pistolsfiringblog.com, or you can check us out on iTunes. Also, I'd like to apologize for the technical difficulties we had during the middle of the podcast. It gets a lot better at the end, so try to hang on through that. Okay, Anthony Slater, welcome back to the podcast.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, we haven't talked to you in a while. I feel like since we talked, I feel like this is a completely different Oklahoma State basketball team. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, just a much more fun team to watch. They're looking a lot better than early in the year. Just, I think offensively is a big thing. They've played decent defense all year, but offensively they're moving better. It's just, early in the year it was so bogged down. There was just no on-court chemistry, and now it's good. The fan base was getting excited for a little bit, and then I think that whole Kansas-Missouri back-to-back blowout thing kind of tampered the excitement a little bit, but I didn't really understand why, because, you know, nobody really goes to Kansas or Missouri and wins, besides K-State tonight. But, I think moving forward, it's clear that this team's going in the right direction, and they got a core, and I know we've talked about it before, but got to be excited about this team.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to pinpoint what the reason for the turnaround has been. We've talked about on here just how bad it was at the beginning of the year. It wasn't fun to watch. It didn't look like they were having fun playing. And now you watch and it's like they have fun. They're exciting. No, they don't. They're not going to Lawrence to beat KU, but an OSU team hasn't done that in 25 years. It's not like, it's not anything new, you know, and they were competitive and, you know, the first half was obviously a little bit out of control, but I don't know. I'm trying to pinpoint what it is that they're doing better. I don't know if it's playing Markell at the point guard more or if it's just this team coming together and gelling. What is it?
I think they just found the core that they wanted. They kind of had a lot of players early in the year, and I've written about it a little bit. Everyone was like, I want 25 minutes, and when they were in, they were either worried that if they made a mistake, they were coming out, or they were trying to, prove they deserve the minutes. And it just wasn't that off the court, but on the court, it was all individual almost. And they've gotten put in this spot where it's, five or six of them, and they had to come together, and they've started gelling. And it's a young team that took time. How much more consistent is LeBrian Nash now? Brian Williams is playing better. Michael Cobbins is getting better every game. Lately. Remember when he retired in the middle of the year? He wasn't even a factor for 10 games. And I think that's all allowed Keaton Page to slip back into a role he's a little more comfortable with.
What did you think about Nash's comments yesterday when he was talking about how there's a 60 or 70% chance that he's going to come back to Oklahoma State? That seemed like a kind of a bizarre number to put on it. Like, it was just, middle of the season, and it was just kind of weird, I thought.
Yeah, I kind of put him on the spot with that question, not gonna lie. I had seen him tweet, and I wanted to, I had been thinking of asking him, and I was just like, kind of put a number, like, what's your chance of coming back next year? He's about as honest as he'll get at the school, so you could tell he doesn't want to sit there and tell me it's 100%, because, what if something happens? What if the Raptors say, we want you and we want you fit for some reason. So it seems like he wants to come back. I know what you're saying. It was kind of bizarre, but I did put him on the spot a little bit. So
yeah, no, that makes sense more. I guess I didn't know what the context of the question was, but that makes a little bit more sense from his perspective, I guess. You've been in Stillwater. I've kind of just, looked at things from afar, but it seems like this Lob Stilly thing and kind of the students are really starting to feel this team. Do you get that sense as well?
Yeah, it's fun to watch. The whole Lob Stilly thing, it's kind of a cool little gimmick that gets people excited. And this team is pretty amazing highlight-wise. They're good for, three or four a game, which, I mean, even think about last year's team, you know, like everything was in the post, Marshall Moses, Matt Pilgrim, like this last year's team had a better record, but I mean, how much more are you enjoying this year's team, even though what they're like 13-13 or something?
Yeah, I agree. And I think even, you know, there's still people that aren't buying into what this team has going on, you know, for the momentum going into next year. And I just, the difference to me is just that last year you had guys that were seniors in Pilgrim and Marshall Moses that were, you know, kind of carrying the load, scoring a lot of points. And so you lose that momentum coming into this year. But this year's different because your only senior is Keaton, and I feel like you're really building from the bottom up with freshmen and sophomores. I mean, isn't that kind of what Ford – I mean, that seems like what Ford is trying to do.
I mean, this is really cool. I mean, the three freshmen, then plus Nash, my uncle Kenny next year – Darrell Williams, I mean, I don't know about his legal issues, but like if those are going to be taken care of, but Keaton told me the other day that he might be the best player in practice. Like I guess he just dominates at the post in practice. But so if he's back, there's your inside scoring. Like you said, last year with the seniors, they were the big players, but now I mean, looking towards next year, I mean, it looks like a tournament team to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think at the very least, you have to think it's a bubble team. And I'll be really interested to see what Ford does with the non-conference schedule. I think he, just in reading, I mean, it seems like he really regrets.
He's going soft. He's going to go pretty soft next year. What happened this year? They had the number one strength schedule. It was number three, but I think, like at Missouri, they jumped up to number one. They weren't as ready as you thought. And they tried to schedule some things, and the way other things fell, like, it was almost on accident that it just all came together and was like, they happened to be playing this team that year, and everyone happened to be good at this time they were playing. Because I know they decided to be in the NIT tournament like 4 years ago, and it just ended up falling on this year. From what I've heard, they're going to go pretty soft next year. They're playing in like a tournament in Puerto Rico, I think. Everything else will probably be, you know, Langston 8 times at home or something.
I would not complain about that. I don't need to see Pitt and Alabama and all that. But don't
Panhandle
you?
Panhandle State.
I mean, don't you get the feeling if they play Alabama again today, they beat them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that game was in the middle. Just that little, I don't even know. They were just so bogged down. I mean, when Dowell, I mean, you hate to say it, and like, Ford won't, like, openly say he's glad, like, Dowell or Goalie left, like, because, you know, he's obviously not going to say that, but, I mean, this team is way better off with those two guys gone, aren't they?
Yeah, no, I agree, and you know, some people have kind of commented that Ford got lucky because all these guys left, so it kind of just the rotation fell into place, and maybe that's true, but it kind of is what it is, and he's done a great job of coaching. I mean, he's fighting for the top half of the Big 12 with basically a rotation of six guys. I mean, kind of seven, but not basically six
young guys.
Yeah,
six guys that are in their first, you know, Big 12 season. Pretty much all of them. I mean, besides Paige, I mean, Marco Brown played a good amount of Big 12 last year, but this is a young team that's getting some incredible experience. I mean, next year, you almost like feel like Williams and Cobbins and Nash are sophomores at this point. I mean, just experience-wise, because they pretty much played a Big 12 schedule for the entire season, because it wasn't a sophomore conference, like we said.
Yeah, so, no, that's totally true, and people go by – you know, it's kind of like the theory in the NFL that it doesn't matter for running backs. It doesn't matter how many games you've played, but it matters how many carries you've had. And kind of for these guys, it matters how many, I mean, they've had so many minutes and good minutes, you know, minutes at KU, minutes at Missouri, minutes at Texas. That'll be.
And adversity within those games that you build on. Yeah. And I mean, we talk about the biggest jump in college is usually freshman to sophomore, especially that summer. I mean, this, like, people are excited now. I mean, I think Michael Collins is going to be able to, you know, gain another 25 pounds this summer. LeBron Nash is going to, you know, kind of have time to reflect on what was good, what was bad, and he'll probably come back if, you know, if he comes back to LSU, he'll probably come back, you know, just feeling a lot more confident, especially early in the season. And if they can get a soft non-conference schedule, like I assume Ford's going to schedule, they could get rolling early next year.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. It's exciting times for where I think the program has been in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. It's exciting to kind of look ahead and see what this team could be. And I feel bad for Keaton, and I know we've talked about this a little bit, but I feel bad for him that he's not going to really reap the benefits of that. But Saturday was a pretty cool moment. Was it as cool in Galgaraba as it seemed on TV?
Yeah, it was. And I'm doing a big story on him, so I've been kind of talking to him a lot more lately. People feel bad for him, but I mean, he's pretty satisfied with the season. And the thing is, you might see him, it's a decent chance you'll see him on the bench next season as a coach.
Yeah.
So, he's satisfied with his career, I think.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't feel too bad for him. And then to the point of a lot of people, kind of the more pessimistic fans right now, are saying, you know, well, it's always next year, every year that the OSU family is excited going in, and then they kind of get disappointed. But I think the biggest thing was early, before this year, people were excited, but it was all players they hadn't really seen. They were just hearing about, oh, Nash is going to be so great. Oh, you know, Collins, Williams. Now going into next year, you already know about your core, and you have an idea of what they're going to do, not just hoping. That would be, I think, the biggest difference.
Yeah, and I think people don't necessarily understand or realize what the jump from year one to year two is like. I mean, you've seen it in Markell this year. He's a completely different player this year than he was last year. You saw flashes of it last year, but he's really transformed this year into this guy that you could see being an All-Big 12 player someday. And I think that, I mean, I can see Cobbins and Williams and Nash making that leap next year as well. I think people underestimate how drastic that change is going to be.
It's huge. I mean, we've talked about it plenty. I mean, we'll see next year, but yeah, I mean, it's not just basketball, it's every sport, and everyone just lives in the now, and you know, you view the team now and you think, well, Brian Nash next year at this time will be just as good as he is now, because that's just how you're seeing the team. But
right,
you know, I mean, next year, the optimism should be high. we've talked about it plenty. So,
well, speaking of optimism, I do want to talk a little Cowboy baseball for a minute. All 20 people that were listening are probably turning it off at this point. But you've been around the baseball team a little bit. What's the expectation going into this year? Obviously, they got swept last weekend at Cal Poly. This is a team that's supposed to be in the top half of the Big 12, isn't it?
Yeah, I talked to Anderson a little bit after the game today, which they won. They beat Dallas Baptist, which was a super regional team, and they beat them today 9-7. So that was kind of stemmed what happened this weekend. I was like, okay, maybe it's what's going to be this year. But Cal Poly series, according to Anderson, he just said it was pretty much a weekend from hell. Apparently, they flew into LAX and, you know, it took, 5 hours from LAX, apparently through the LA traffic, to get up to Cal Poly. And they got in at 11 and then had to do a workout at 11:30 or something. And they just came out day one, played terrible. And it kind of carried through the weekend, apparently, out there. And he seems to not be too worried about it. They look pretty good today. Well, the offense looks much better. We'll see. I mean, I can't sit here and tell you what this team's going to look like, because they only have 10 returners. I think they have 25 newcomers. So it just all depends on how these two coach transfers are.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on something there with all the newcomers. I think that makes it really difficult to follow college baseball, along with the fact that it's not on TV as much as football and basketball. But unless you're, you know, unless you're there going to the games in Stillwater, it's, I mean, it's pretty tough to follow it. Do you find a lot of students interested or not really?
No, I mean, there's not much interest. So it was opening day today. There was probably 200 people in the stands, and I mean, it's a few, you know, some students, but it's mostly just girls that, you know, think the baseball guys are cute, cleat chasers. But just kidding, not really. It's tough to watch, but I mean, that's what baseball is. The funny thing about baseball is college baseball, I don't even know, is meant to be a fan sport. I mean, like you said, it's a lot of JUCO transfers because that's just kind of the culture around baseball, because everyone's looking to majors, trying to get drafted. So
right,
they're, you know, they're going to a JUCO here, and oh, they got drafted in a round they didn't want. So that, I mean, everyone's just switching schools every year and looking for their, they're just like trying to angle it to get their biggest payday in the league and what can be their biggest payday. So it's hard. It's hard to follow. I enjoy it, but I mean, I can understand why there's not much fans around it.
Yeah, I enjoy it too. And I grew up on it. Like that's what I did. It was, you know, me and my family went to Oklahoma State baseball games, and it's, you know, it's something that I feel like even from then it's really fallen off. And you hit on something else there too. It's, you know, in football and basketball, you have these top recruits that are, are you getting pulled over or something?
No, I'm good.
Okay. You have these top recruits in football and basketball, and you can kind of track where they're going to college. Well, your top 100 guys in baseball, all of them are going to get drafted and go to the, you know, the minor leagues. And so it's like, you can't, you know, the quality probably isn't as high as it is with football and basketball. And you do have a ton of guys going JUCO so they can get drafted again after their freshman year.
I mean, there's pretty much just as much talent in the high JUCOs and D2s and different places as there is in big D1s. It's much more like individual sport. And I can understand, I mean, all them around baseball players, I understand. I mean, they're just trying to, they're out for themselves in this one, because it's not a big fanfare thing. That they don't, you know, they're not like, oh, I want to go to Oklahoma State because of like the atmosphere of the baseball. You know, it's like,
I don't, like, but no, see, I don't think people go anywhere for that in baseball.
That, you know, that's what I mean. Like, it's just, where can I get drafted? Where can I get the most money? How can my signing bonus be here? And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's a problem, but I mean, it's not really going to be fixed. So.
Well, speaking of signing bonuses, NFL Combine starts, I guess we're taping this, we'll run this on a Wednesday, so it's starting today. Justin, who else there for Oklahoma State besides Whedon and Blackman? Is it Markell and Blatnick?
Josh Cooper. Cooper's there, I believe. I think Levy Adcox hurt, so he can't be in it. Grant Garner, I think, might be there. I know that Josh Cooper is, though, and Blatnick.
Is Rashetti there?
I don't think he is. I didn't think he got invited. But
see, I've been looking at it, and I feel like, I don't know, I feel like Whedon's gonna go there and just do what, you know, Whedon type stuff and be impressive and, you know, be funny with general managers, and, you know, I don't think he has an opportunity to hurt himself. I think Blackman goes there, and it's not really fair, but I think all he can do is hurt himself by going.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not him right now, but if you're him, don't you just sit back and not go anywhere and just train by yourself and then go, all right, I mean, all right, Rams, draft me if you want me. You saw me at the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, the whole process.
If you're worried about my 40, don't draft me then. I mean, that's all I said.
Yeah, and I respect him that he is going there and performing and running and doing all that stuff, but it kind of just shines a light on what a joke the whole process is. I mean, if you're good at football, you're good at football. I don't care what you run your 40 in with your shirt off in front of a bunch of people in Indianapolis, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if it's a bad process, but there's definitely flaws. If I'm an NFL general manager, I'm more worried about, and I think there should be more, it's just as people, they more just, I think, in this process, these months, just want to meet them and see what they're about and stuff, see if, you know, just make sure they're not going to be getting arrested times in the next 3 years.
Yeah, and I think that's something where most of the, you know, I probably don't know all those guys, or I haven't talked to those guys as much as you have, but most of these guys are going to be fairly impressive in that process. I know Whedon and Blackman are, and I think, you know, you could probably speak to it better than me, but it seems like some of the other guys would benefit themselves by talking to general managers and draft guys and just kind of, you know, showing who they are.
Yeah, they all are in this senior class. I mean, Blackman, he's great. They're all good. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like, and this is how it's been the last few years. Doesn't it seem like after the season, every one of Oklahoma State's players have their stocks have risen. No one's really had their stock drop at all, at least in the last few years. And it probably speaks to just the character that Gundy's bringing in.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting. I think that, I mean, we're pretty sure that Blackman's going in the top, what, 8, 7, something like that?
Well, I'm a Dolphins fan, so I hope he drops to 9. I believe that's the Dolphins draft, so pair him up with Brandon Marshall.
Well, I mean, I've heard that the Dolphins are kind of interested in Whedon, maybe.
Yeah, they did some, podcast or something, one of the Finsiders or something. they did, a podcast, and so people are saying they're interested. I don't know. They do need a quarterback, though. Matt Moore is not the answer long term. I will admit that. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a team like Seattle or Miami or, I don't know, maybe like Jacksonville or something like that, don't you roll the dice with Whedon in the second round and just say, hey, go start for us for a couple years and we'll see what happens?
I mean,
if you're Seattle, he's not worse than what you have, is he?
Seattle, I think would be a good fit. I mean, maybe even somewhere like Arizona. But where do you rank the quarterbacks right now? I mean, obviously you got Luck, and then I know you don't like RG3. He's not your favorite.
I don't like him over Whedon, but I think if you're a team, I understand why they're drafting him over Whedon, because I think his ceiling is higher than Whedon's. I mean, it definitely is.
I mean, you mentioned teams like they're off going with like an RG3 type. Okay, let's try to mold this guy into our franchise quarterback. I view Whedon a better fit at a place like somewhere like the Jets, where it's like, let's bring him in if he's capable of playing right away, then he'll push Sanchez and he'll maybe take the job. If he's not as good as we thought, you know, we'll stick with Sanchez and we'll go for maybe a franchise quarterback down the road in a couple drafts.
So you're saying kind of like a glorified backup, maybe somebody in Tampa Bay with Josh Freeman who was impressive early and then didn't play that well last year. So maybe you bring Whedon in and they have a little competition and.
I think you bring him in somewhere where he can have a good competition, and then it's almost like, you know, you kind of did take a chance on him because of his age, but he can either, you know, play right away and he's going to push their guy, or, you know, and I'm not saying he's going to be a bust, but it's like, you know, it's all right that we missed on that pick, and we can look for a franchise quarterback down the road.
See, to me, I look at it from the other side, and I think, well, he is 28, so we're going to – to me, if a team's drafting him, they're saying, hey, you're going to go be what Andy Dalton was last year and play. You're going to play all 16 games, you know, and we're going to try to get as much out of you in the next 5 or 6 years as we can before you're 35 years old, you know.
I agree. I'm just saying I think that a team that's looking for like a franchise quarterback, like they're not necessarily are planning on winning right away. They're just trying to build a franchise. Like somewhere like Seattle, I mean, I don't think they have ideas of making a deep run in the playoffs next year. They probably are trying to get a franchise quarterback. I'm looking at somewhere like the Jets that's going, you know, we got an amazing defense. We got a lot of skill position weapons. Smart Sanchez has kind of been an issue the last few years. Let's bring Whedon in. if he's good right away, you know, he's got the starting job the next 5 years. If he's not what we thought he was, you know, we can go try to get a franchise quarterback next year.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I do understand that, you know, if you're a bad team, you want a guy that's going to be your franchise for the next 10 years. I mean, yeah, I definitely understand that.
And I mean, because let's say a place like Seattle gets him, and Whedon's really good, you know, you're still like a couple years away from, you know, being able to build stuff around him that's good, and then he's, you know, 31, 32. So right. That's tough. I think he needs to go somewhere, like I said, Jets, maybe Arizona. I mean, Arizona has a pretty good defense. Fitzgerald, they just kind of had quarterback problems.
I mean, it is interesting, though, in this day and age with NFL teams, they're so close in talent. It's almost like from year to year, you don't know who's going to make the playoffs or not. You know, I mean, who last year would have thought, the Giants were, or the, excuse me, the 49ers were going to go 13-3. I mean, they weren't even that good last year.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I don't know. I think coaching has a lot to do with the NFL. Just that Harbaugh transition was big, but quarterbacks are big. So you're right. I mean, you never do know. And I think even with the draft, you don't really know. I mean, I know there's a lot of OSU fans are so sure Whedon's going to be great. And, you know, he may be great, but he may not be either. You don't know with a lot of, besides like maybe the first five picks, there's not really sure things.
Well, and there's so many variables, you know, like maybe he ends up in Arizona and Cobb gets hurt and he fills in and he's awesome, but maybe he ends up in Miami and Matt Moore takes off and he never gets to play, you know, like there's just so many factors that go into it.
Yeah. And it's just, you don't know how they're going to handle the situation until they get there. You don't know how Brandon Whedon, you know, he drops back and instead of, you know, some TCU or, you know, some Texas A&M linebacker running across the middle, you know, it's Ray Lewis running across the middle, and oh, Justin Tuck, you know, pressuring him from the end. And he's not doing, you know, shotgun stuff. I'm not saying he's a system quarterback, but it's just a little different when Justin Tuck and Human Yora are, you know, coming in on, you know, different sides. Like, I heard, did you hear that mic'd up in the Super Bowl? I thought it was pretty funny. Brady was talking. It was just like talking on the sidelines mid-game. And he's like talking to Welker or something. He's like, damn, they're just like trying to throw to a forest in there. I guess like their hands are just up in the air. And he's like trying to throw to a forest with those guys.
Well, and that's everything you described right there is why I would always take defensive guys early, because you know what you're getting, and it's more about drafting somebody that's a great athlete and somebody that's fast than it is somebody who, I mean, offense is just so, especially a quarterback, it's so like you have to react and you have no idea how somebody's going to respond. You're right. But on defense, if you're drafting a Patrick Peterson or a Morris Claiborne, like you know what you're getting. Like they just are what they are, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's like you mentioned earlier, the combine's kind of stupid in some points. And I think with somebody like Blackman, like it's stupid, you know, he's going to be a very good receiver. It doesn't matter if it's a 4.42 or a 4.52. But that, I mean, you can kind of sometimes identify and the players by like, okay, like that speed does translate to an NFL DN. So that's why I think that the combine does have its bonuses. And
yeah,
you can figure out the sure things, especially on defense. And I mean, we've seen over the last couple of years, I mean, D tackles seems like they go like 3 in the top 10 every year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
So I mean, my whole thing with Whedon is, I mean, I think he's a little underrated, and nationally, I agree with everyone that, like, you know, he's a little under the radar of somebody's just on him, but I feel like on the other side of the spectrum, all the OSU fans are just so sure that he is going to be a star. They've, like, gotten to it because they've argued against these national guys so long that it's just, like, rock solid in their mind that, like, this guy's going to come out and he's going to be a Tom Brady next year. It's like, I'm not saying he's not going to be a stud, but you've got to wait till he's taking, you know, he's taking the ball from under center and he's play actioning with Ray Rice. And then, you know, freaking Mario Williams is coming off the edge and stuff.
I think my bigger issue with that is not that I'm so certain he's going to be a star, because I'm not. But that how I don't understand how you look at the body of work that say a Nick Foles and a Tannehill and a Whedon have put together, and you say I want to draft Foles and Tannehill over him, and not just the body of work, but just how they're made up, how they're built, even the age thing. I mean, even with that considered, I just don't. I guess that's the part I don't understand. I understand Griffin. I understand Luck. I understand, you know, a few of these guys that are getting, they're going to get taken ahead of him. But Tannehill and Foles, like, what is that? I mean, I don't get it.
I mean, Foles has a decent arm, but I don't really understand the Tannehill one at all. I guess the only argument could be he's played quarterback for like a year, and maybe people are seeing that, you know, once they develop him and really have him play quarterback for a while, he'll be good. I don't see that one. I mean, you know, the one I really didn't see was last year. I remember watching Missouri, and I wasn't really paying attention to Mel Kiper or anything. And then I heard that Blaine Gabbert was supposed to be, like, the first quarterback chosen. I was like, what? Like, that guy, I didn't even think he was going to be drafted. So, I don't know. I mean, they break down film. I don't agree with a lot of times, and a lot of times the people arguing against them are right, and, you know, maybe Whedon will be better, but, I mean, there's an off chance that Ryan Tannehill somehow turns into a good player. I don't know. I don't really like breaking down this stuff. I just like watching.
as we spend 35 minutes of a podcast breaking it down.
I know, it's true. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. All this stuff is irrelevant once they get to camp and teams can see what they can do, and then it goes from there.
Yeah.
I understand it, and I understand why Kiper's there, but I'll just say that's a job I never want to do.
No, I completely agree with you. Okay, Slater. Well, I appreciate you joining us again, and we'll have you on later on this spring to finish up the basketball season, and then maybe get some more into baseball, and then the NFL draft as it rolls around.
Sounds good. And for the three people that made it through those rants we just had, follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, that's
at Anthony V. Slater.
Yeah, at Anthony V. Slater on Twitter. And you guys can catch him at ocali.com as well.
Yep. All right. I'll see you later.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.